whether you like her or not, the governor is now at a different level. And our level is here in this state.
State lawmakers contemplate the Sarah Palin effect on the November ballot. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 25th of September. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, new population numbers show no rebound for Cook Inlet belugas.
If science is important, then this population will be listed, and it should be listed.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. You can prevent costly damage to the environment with an inspection of heating equipment and fuel oil tanks. Spills can contaminate drinking water and stormwater drains, which can cause health problems for people and animals. Technical assistance is available online at dec.state.ak.us. Click on the Spill Prevention and Response link for assistance to the Home Heating Oil webpage. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation.
APRN will be providing special coverage of the 50th anniversary of Alaska statehood. For sponsorship information, call 550-8400.
Prosecutors and defense lawyers for Senator Ted Stevens presented their opening arguments in U.S. District Court today. As the judge reminded the panel of 12 jurors and four alternates, the opening statements are a roadmap of where the lawyers hope to go, not actual evidence of innocence or wrongdoing. But listening to the two sides paint their versions of the case gave two very different pictures of Ted Stevens. From Washington, APRN's Libby Casey reports.
Government lawyers prosecuting Senator Ted Stevens say he schemed to take gifts worth more than $250,000 and hid it from the public eye. But Stevens' lawyers say he did not intentionally violate the law and described him as an honest and loyal Alaskan who's dedicated his life to service. Opening statements are lawyers' chance to prepare jurors for what's to come in the weeks ahead. Prosecutor Brenda Morris hammered a message that Stevens knowingly and repeatedly concealed gifts. She said he was well aware of Senate rules that say members must disclose any gifts worth around $300. But he hid them, Morris said, to keep the benefits flowing and to keep public attention away from his benefactor, oil field services company Vico. Morris said at the same time the gifts were coming, Stevens was using his power as a senator to help Vico make more money. She says much of the trial will be about Stevens' Girdwood home, which was renovated in 2000. Morris says Stevens used Vico to manage the renovation instead of hiring a contractor and had the company do a variety of work, from designing the project to taking care of details. She said the senator never paid Vico anything for that work. Morris told the jurors, quote, "We reached for the yellow pages and he reached for Vico." But when it was Stevens' lawyer's turn to talk, Brendan Sullivan showed the jury a very different man. He asked why in his 75th year of life would Alaska's senior senator decide to become a criminal. Sullivan dropped names of people who would vouch for Stevens' character, Senators Ted Kennedy, Daniel Inouye, and Orrin Hatch. He said it was Stevens' wife, Catherine, who handled the finances surrounding the Girdwood home. She paid the bills and had the vision for what the house should look like. Sullivan said he felt some discomfort about the fact that during the trial, he and the jurors would have to look at the relationship of the couple, but he said it's necessary to understand the situation. Sullivan said what happened with the remodel is, quote, "a strange story," and he blamed any problems with unpaid bills on Vico CEO Bill Allen, who he called devious. Allen was a friend of Stevens. He was once a respected businessman in Alaska, but in 2007 pleaded guilty to bribing state lawmakers. Sullivan said Stevens and his wife did ask Allen to oversee the renovation as a friend and review the bills. That's because the Stevens couple lives more than 3,000 miles away from Girdwood in Washington and rarely make it home. Sullivan said that at first, a contractor Bill Allen found to work on the house sent bills out and Catherine Stevens paid them. But then the lawyer said, quote, "something extraordinary happens. The bills stop coming because of Bill Allen." Sullivan said Allen pressured the contractor to eat a cost of $19,000. He said the Stevens couple never knew there were unpaid bills. The lawyer said Allen let the cost soar over budget and threw in additional things that Ted and Catherine Stevens didn't want. Government prosecutors allege that Stevens took numerous gifts, like roof heating tape and a gas grill. But Stevens' lawyer had an explanation for each of them. The heating tape was installed by Allen to fix a design flaw in the construction. The couple wasn't billed because it was a repair for something not done properly in the first place. As far as the gas grill, Stevens never wanted it, and Catherine was afraid of it, so they kept it padlocked shut and unused. Sullivan said Stevens told Bill Allen that it could stay on the deck only for Allen's use when he came over, not for Stevens. And the lawyer said if ever Stevens did push to help Vico as a senator, it's something he's proud of because Vico is one of Alaska's largest employers, and anything done for them was really done for Alaskans. Stevens' lawyer finished by asking jurors to, quote, free him of this burden and send him right out the door. Prosecutors, though, don't buy the notion that Stevens was the victim of Bill Allen's schemes or that his wife took care of all the renovation paperwork. Prosecutor Brenda Morris told the jurors, all residents of Washington, that, quote, you do not survive as a politician in this town that long without being very, very smart and flying under the radar. She said Stevens' friends were, quote, old school and protected the senator and were used to doing him favors. Stevens sat listening during opening arguments. His face was stony, and he frowned as the prosecutor talked. When she was done and the court took a brief break, Stevens hugged his daughter on the way out of the room. After opening statements, the prosecution immediately called its first witness, John Hess, a Vico employee who designed the renovation to the Girdwood home. He had a letter from Stevens saying that he appreciated the work Hess had done and that he wanted a bill. Stevens wrote, quote, as I told you, under our Senate rules, I must pay you for what you have done. But Hess says he wrote back to Stevens, either by letter or fax, he couldn't remember, and told the senator that he should talk to Vico about paying the bill. The second witness was Derek Awad, who also worked for Vico and installed a generator at the Stevens home. The men are the first in a handful of witnesses who will testify about work done by Vico at the Girdwood house. The question for jurors will be whether Stevens avoided paying for the work or whether Bill Allen prevented the senator from knowing what was going on back in Girdwood. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
Candidates in this year's legislative races are preparing to see what kind of pull Governor Palin will have on this year's general election. Her influence was always expected to be a part of the outcome, but at a safe distance in the governor's office. But with the national attention drawn to her, candidates of both parties will find out in November the effects of having her name inside the polling booth near the top of the ballot. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
It's like those days, then hours, before you expect a blizzard. Anticipation of the unknown. And the anxiety is sometimes worse than the results. Both sides of the ballot are anxious to see Sarah Palin's success in carrying Republican candidates with her this fall. The leader of the House Democrats, Beth Kurtula, wants to keep the state races free from federal campaign influence. She says it would make a huge difference to the people of Alaska.
Whether you like her or not, the governor is now at a different level, and our level is here in this state, and that's my future, and that's our future, and that's what I'm, you know, encouraging everybody that's running on the House ticket this time to focus on.
Kurtula says she's working with the Democratic candidates for congressional offices, Mark Begich and Ethan Berkowitz. They have long coattails that can help what's called the down-ballot candidates. But they're not campaigning together or with legislative candidates. And Kurtula says there still are Alaska issues that don't figure into the national campaigns.
No matter what happens on the national level, my hope is that we stay stable in state because we've got to push forward in Alaska on a lot of issues very quickly. Our energy issue, our health care issue, you know, stabilizing our economy so that we can stay strong and continue our forward momentum.
Kurtula recognizes that all politics is local, and everyone has to run a local campaign to get to office. Now, Speaker John Harris agrees. However, at the least, he says the Republican excitement about having Palin on the national ballot will help with voter turnout of the Republican base, and that could help his legislative candidates. However, he's reminding them about the outcome of the congressional primary race between Sean Parnell and Don Young, where Palin took an active role for Parnell.
The governor's coattails, certainly in that race, they weren't very long. And, you know, I don't think anybody with long coattails will drag a poor candidate across the finish line. You've got to have good people, and that's why I say, you know, for us to win our seats, whether it's with or without Sarah Palin, we have to have good people running.
The Democrats' nominee for Congress, Ethan Berkowitz, doesn't see Palin's having any more effect on the general election than Harris does. Maybe less. Berkowitz says his poll numbers actually went up when Palin went on the national ballot. He says she represented change to the Republican Party, as she did to Alaskans 2 years ago. He says change doesn't come with a party label on it. Alaskans vote for the individual. Democrat John Brown, who's running against incumbent Jay Ramirez in Fairbanks, is finding that true. He says people he's met on the campaign trail support the governor very much, and they've been more interested in Sarah Palin's issues at the Capitol than her party label.
It's not, you know, what party you belong to. She's done some very good things, and people have shown that with their support. Many Democrats, including myself, have agreed with her on a lot of issues, on ethics and oil tax reform and her efforts to build a gas line, the AGIA process.
The strength Governor Palin will have remaining on Election Day is just speculation right now. Her statewide popularity numbers have fallen more than 10% in the past few weeks, and several national polls are also showing that the McCain-Palin team is starting to settle lower. The Palin blizzard that candidates on both sides were preparing for might not hit Alaska this year. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Sitka prepares for a new wave of electric vehicles.
With 10 cent electricity, you get 5 miles per kilowatt hour. That's like 2 cents.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Condor Airlines, offering nonstop service to Frankfurt from Anchorage and Fairbanks between May and October, with connections to most German and European destinations. Details available at condor.com.
9 out of 10 of Alaska's boating fatalities are adult males. Most drowned following an unexpected fall or capsize into cold water. Cold water can kill the unprepared, regardless of swimming ability. Wearing a life jacket can make the difference between life and death. Make your family's boating memories good ones. Always wear a life jacket when boating Alaska's cold water. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
The National Marine Fisheries Service released the 2008 Cook Inlet Beluga Survey numbers today. The count of estimated animals is the same as last year, 375. The number was important to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, as the agency has been delaying a final decision on whether or not to list the Cook Inlet Beluga under the Endangered Species Act until they had this year's number. Rod Hobbs heads up the Beluga project at the National Marine Mammal Lab in Seattle. He employs a complicated percentage system to calculate abundance based on aerial counts and video footage of the whales. He says the beluga seem to be remaining at levels between 300 and 400 animals.
So it may be stable. When you fit a line to it, it's actually declining slowly. But it's not increasing, and that's what we had anticipated once the harvest was controlled. And that's the thing that has worried the Fisheries Service and made us consider listing it under the Endangered Species Act, is that population does not seem to be recovering.
Subsistence harvest of Cook Inlet beluga has been virtually non-existent since 1999, and that ban is still in place until 2012. But the whales still have not rebounded, and that puzzles researchers. Environmental organizations have pointed to industrial pollutants, oil and gas development, toxic runoff from Anchorage, and untreated sewage as contributing to the beluga's moribund numbers. Audubon Alaska scientist John Shane says population modeling points to an extinction in decades if protections are not put in place.
The population is so small right now, compounded by the fact that these animals all concentrate seasonally in, you know, perhaps a single group. 90% of the population may occur on the Chicloun Flats or over in the Susitna River Flats. If there was a mass stranding, or a major killer whale predation event, something like that could put the population over the brink. So it's not just human-caused issues. The population is so small that it's highly vulnerable to some kind of a catastrophic event.
NIMS biologist Barbara Mahoney says there is an average of about 12 deaths per year. This year, 10 belugas were found dead and 28 were live stranded. Mahoney says a NOAA lab is looking at samples.
They'll be looking at the heavy metals and the organochlorines and such like that, and to compare to the samples that were collected and analyzed prior to 98. But we also have a contract to have a lab look at pHs more associated with oil development too. So we're definitely been spending time getting more information from belugas and Kwikinlet as we can.
The Audubon's John Shane says the situation warrants a single response.
The science is absolutely clear. The population is small. It's not increasing. It's highly at risk. So if science is important, then this population will be listed, and it should be listed.
A final listing decision on the belugas will be released on October 20th. Several Southeast communities and businesses are taking a closer look at using wood to power generators and heat buildings. Craig, for example, is already burning mill waste to warm two schools and a swimming pool. Now Cakes Village Corporation is trying to set up wood-fired electrical generators, and Southeast's Regional Native Corporation is partnering with a mill to look at producing wood pellets or a similar product. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
The village of Cake on Central Southeast's Kuprinoff Island used to have 700 to 800 residents, but Cake Tribal Corporation board member Sasha Sobolov says it's down to about 500, and more people could go soon.
They had to leave because there's no economy. The fish is gone, the timber processes are gone, and so in order to revitalize that, the basic building block is to have a resource of energy that allows the development of businesses in Cake.
State and Power Authority officials are working on an intertie linking the village with a hydro plant that serves nearby Petersburg, but that's tens of millions of dollars and a number of years away. Sobolov says wood energy is a cheaper, quicker solution to some of Cake's energy problems. He estimates a pair of generators, a chipper, and related equipment would cost about $2 million and could be installed in months rather than years. Cake Tribal is just one Southeast entity that wants to find new uses for the region's wood. See Alaska, the area's regional native corporation, is another. CEO Chris McNeil says See Alaska is partnering with Viking Lumber of Klawock to investigate what he's calling an alternative energy supply enterprise.
The project, as we now envision it, would be the ability for us to be able to use wood waste resources of all sorts, to be able to create a new product, either be in the pellet or the brick form, that would be able to be used for heating.
The effort would involve more manufacturing than just chipping and piling wood into a furnace. McNeil says fuel could come from the mill's operations, See Alaska's timber subsidiary, or other sources. While some are looking at logging leftovers and mill waste, others are targeting second-growth trees, also known as young growth. Tongass National Forest Supervisor Forrest Cole says his agency is pursuing several projects to use thinned-out trees and other low-value wood.
We have the district in Sitka working on a project. We recently were on Prince of Wales to come up with a project in the Stainy Creek area that will start probably in the near future. But the interest in biomass and young growth management is higher than I've ever seen it. And if we can create alternative energy sources out of biomass, I think that will have a lot of interest in the near term.
Cole says the result could be chips for boilers and generators or finished products such as pellets or briquettes. Tlingit Haida Central Council Energy Director Percy Frisbee says he's glad businesses and government groups are moving ahead on wood energy.
We need to start some of these projects to see how we can apply them. I think we've talked about it long enough. We need to start figuring out, you know, how we're going to make a difference here.
Craig's wood waste burner is the largest so far. The Prince of Wales Island City is creating more heat than expected and may add at least one building to the three that are already connected. The $1.5 million project was funded by the city, the Forest Service, the Alaska Energy Authority, and the Denali Commission. Similar projects elsewhere will also require government funds to get going. That could include alternative energy money appropriated by the legislature. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the University of Alaska College Savings Plan, providing tax-advantaged college savings options for Alaska families. T. Rowe Price Investment Services Incorporated, distributor, underwriter. Information at 1-888-4, and then Alaska. And by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
A new report detailing Fairbanks' greenhouse gas emissions is a key step forward in the community's investigation of coal-to-liquid fuel technology. Borough Assemblyman Luke Hopkins says the data provides an emissions target for the borough to beat. One of the key economic components of the multi-billion-dollar coal-to-liquids project is supplying Eielson Air Force Base with alternative aircraft fuel. Hopkins says to do that, the borough has to meet a federal emissions mandate.
To be able to supply alternative fuels to the military under the federal public law that was enacted, the process that you utilize to produce the alternative fuels cannot create any more emissions than you're currently producing.
Coal is known as a dirty fuel in terms of emissions, but Hopkins says abundant CO2 produced by a coal-to-liquids facility could be captured either for sequestration or use in other industrial energy processes. Hopkins, who also serves on an Interior Issues Council Climate Change Task Force, says the greenhouse gas inventory, which shows Fairbanks residents generating 64% more emissions than the average American, also provides a baseline to improve upon with energy conservation measures. Inventory author Gwen Holdman says much of Fairbanks' CO2 emissions reflect geography and climate.
With our dark climate and our cold climate, we're obviously going to be above the national average. And another thing to be thinking about, too, is that things don't operate as efficiently in cold climates. So one thing that we've been taking a look at is the decrease in efficiency in, say, motor vehicles when it's cold out.
State funding is helping Alaska residents perform hundreds of millions of dollars in home energy efficiency upgrades, changes that will reduce heating and power generation demand and emissions in Fairbanks. While many Alaskans are paying fuel bills with their energy checks from the state, others are trying to leverage the temporary relief into something more permanent. As part of Coast Alaska's series on how people are adapting to high fuel prices, KCAW's Robert Woolsey met with a couple of Sitka residents who have made large investments in lowering some of their energy costs.
How much would you pay to never have to buy gas again? To trade the din of the internal combustion engine for the futuristic hum of an electric motor and every other sound your old car makes but you never noticed before?
A whole lot of the noise that you hear is just the ground moving underneath you, the tires, and also the brakes, you know, actually holding on to the drums and stuff. Things Perry's like now trying to fix everything in my car because he's like, I can hear that. I never heard that before. So yeah, it's incredibly quiet.
For Michelle Putz, a Forest Service employee and global warming activist in Sitka, the price of being gas-free is $4,000. That's how much she paid for an electric conversion kit for her 1996 Geo Metro, not including installation. The conversion took longer than expected, and Putz compromised on power and range to keep the Metro light enough to carry passengers. Still, she believes the project pencils out.
It'd be nice to buy an electric car, but they're not going to be cheap. The ones that are coming out are going to be $30,000 or more. So if you've got especially a smaller, lighter car, it's a way to go that's not that expensive, you know?
With 10-cent electricity, you get 5 miles per kilowatt hour, that's like 2 cents. So that's where I think people start going for electric cars, aside from the environmental aspects and all, is just economics.
Sitka's utility director, Charlie Walls, is taking the development of electric cars very seriously. He's estimating that electricity demand will grow in Sitka roughly 2.5% per year over the next 2 decades, in part due to electric cars. According to the DOT, Sitka currently has as many registered motor vehicles as people, around 8,500, and half of them are passenger cars. Charlie Walls is doing some motor vehicle math based on increasing interest nationwide in electric cars.
Bottom line is, I'm assuming that about 75% of the passenger cars in Sitka will be electric cars in 20 years.
Yeah, you know, if it's just the flats, I pedal. It doesn't matter. I'll ride out to C-Mart and get groceries or whatever. But if I'm feeling lazy, I turn it on, and it's you feel like you're young again. I let a friend ride it, and he said, wow, I feel like Lance Armstrong.
William Stortz works in maintenance at the Mount Edgecombe Hospital and wears a tool belt for a living. Earlier this summer, Stortz was driving his pickup to work and saw a yachtsman on a battery-assisted folding bike cruising up the steep hill near his home. After some internet research and some conversations with a helpful California bike shop, Stortz paid over $1,600 for a Bion-X, a Canadian-made pedal electric conversion kit that fits just about any bicycle. His motivating principle was getting the most out of a 30-minute lunchtime.
I think mostly just the idea of being able to go back and forth to work without working up such a sweat. You know, I work hard. I'm in the trades, so I would do manual labor a lot, and the last thing I need to do is get a workout at the end of a day.
I can't begin to tell you how it works, except that it requires you to pedal to get the assist, which at the touch of a button can range from 25% to 50%, 100%, or a whopping 300%.
I look at this as a, what was that money we got, that economic stimulus package? Well, I sent mine to Canada. Not very patriotic of me, was it?
Including the Bion-X bike, Sitka is up to 6 electric vehicles now. Michelle Putz has been swamped by interested onlookers when she's parked her Metro at the community's first 2 farmers markets this summer. It's hard to say whether a few electric cars and a bike are a real shift toward something new or just a reaction to fuel prices.
Should we go?
In Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Robert Woolsey in Sitka. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Profit is our webmaster. Our managing editor is Duncan Moon. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the University of Alaska College Savings Plan, providing tax-advantaged college savings options for Alaska families. T. Rowe Price Investment Services Incorporated, distributor, underwriter. Information at 1-888-4, and then Alaska.
First National Bank, Alaska. Branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
And by the Rasmussen Foundation, partnering with Alaska's nonprofits and people to improve the quality of life throughout our state. Lack of maintenance is the primary reason heating oil tanks contaminate drinking water, sewers, and stormwater drains. Homeowners are liable under state law for the cleanup of spills from home heating oil tanks on their property. So prevent spills by arranging an inspection of tanks and heating equipment before and during the heating season. Information online at dec.state.ak.us. Click on the Spill Prevention and Response link. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.